Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to start the hour talking trees. Two people tragically lost their lives on July 3rd when a huge branch from an oak tree fell on them as they were watching fireworks in Rock Island, Illinois. Now, there's likely no way to know if that horrible accident was preventable, but it is a sad reminder that we should all be aware of the health of the trees in our landscape. And to help us take stock of the structural integrity of our trees, Jeff Iles is here. He's professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, trees, that especially old trees, they look so big and strong. Do we tend to just kind of take for granted that they're fine?
I think we probably do to our own peril sometimes, and by your lead-in was perfect. I really appreciate that. And we have to remind ourselves that when bad things happen like that, it is such a small percentage of trees that do this. But still, it is a reminder that these big, heavy things that we cohabitate with deserve our respect, deserve our attention. And therefore, if you live with one of these large trees, we get a lot of benefits from them, but they require some care, some vigilance. And there are lots and lots of people that are trained in tree care to help us do that.
Well, and of course, if you're fortunate enough to have a large shade tree near your home, you're very aware of the benefits, really the energy savings, the beauty, and all of the great things. But it is more likely than causing danger to people that trees might cause a threat to structures or
right.
your car, that kind of thing, right?
Right. And there's nothing worse than being woken up at 3 a.m. with a branch in your bed with you. So not that that's ever happened to me, but you can just imagine. And whenever I walk through a neighborhood or whenever my wife and I were looking for a brand new home, one of the things we paid attention to was the large trees on the property, and we appreciate them. But how close are they to the structure? How many large branches are hanging out over the structure? And are any of them capable of falling apart? And so it is something that I think we all need to be aware of, not paranoid of. We love our trees, but you need to be aware of potential problems.
So how do you practice that awareness? What do you look for in your trees?
Well, the first thing that grabs my attention is the size of the tree, the age of the tree, and is part of the tree extending out over the structure. And if I can answer yes to all of those, then I'm going to take a closer look. And I'm going to probably pay more attention to those tree species that have a bad reputation. Not that these are bad plants, but they are ones that often do cause us problems. And the list of characters is familiar. Silver maple, hackberry, old American lindens tend to give us some trouble. And then, of course, if you throw in cottonwood and some of the others, they just get huge. Then I look at those very, very carefully. And then I start to do the physics in my mind that I can remember from high school is if I've got a large, heavy branch hanging out over a house, what's holding that branch in place? Is the branch firmly attached to the tree? And sometimes we can determine that from the ground. Sometimes it requires a trained arborist to get up in the tree and give it a closer inspection. The thing that drives us all crazy and makes us all a bit risk-averse and nuts about this is that trees don't always give us clues. I'm afraid the situation you described in Rock Island was one where the tree wasn't screaming at us. It wasn't telling us that there was a potential danger. And that's the great unknown. Sometimes branches fall out of trees for no apparent reason. So that doesn't mean we clear-cut, but it does mean that we have to look at these trees very, very carefully.
So what are some of the things that happen that make you think, okay, I need to, again, take stock of my tree? Is this something that you need to do on an annual basis, or do you think about weather events?
Both. I think an annual inspection is a great idea, but whenever we've gone through a period of weather like we just have, in the state of Iowa, we've had some severe weather over the past few weeks. Whenever we've had strong winds, I think that is a great time to go back out and reassess what's going on. After a high wind event, you might have a branch that has exhibited a crack. or looks different in some way. And so after a storm, I like to go back out and take a look at my trees. I also look for trees that just have bad architecture, and that's kind of a hard thing to define. But if I've got a large, heavy branch hanging out over my house that is almost the same diameter as the trunk that it's attached to, that's not a good thing. There are some aspect ratios that we pay attention to, and when that branch and when you consider the weight that is up there, you've got to really pay attention to things like that. So how is that branch attached? But is that thing so large that it's approximating the branch that it's attached to? That's a warning sign, and I don't need to see a crack in order to be alarmed by that. So then it begs the question, well, what do? Do you take that branch off? Because if you do, you're removing a lot of leaf tissue. You're leaving a pretty large wound that the tree might not be able to handle. And so these are not easy decisions. And I don't mean to make them sound easy, but they are things that attract my attention. So if I'm a homeowner somewhere in the state of Iowa or anywhere in the world, and if I see something that just looks amiss, then I'm probably going to get on the phone and find a certified arborist that is certified through the International Society of Arboriculture, and hopefully that has a credential called TRAC. That's an acronym that stands for Tree Risk Assessment Qualification. I want a TRAC certified arborist to look at my tree, and I would feel pretty good about what he or she has to say about my plant.
Now, there are trees in our landscapes that we just love so much and don't want to let go, almost no matter what happens to them. Almost every week we get a call from somebody saying, I have a split in my tree or a crack in my tree or something like that. So let's say you do the assessment and there is a structural problem. What can you do about it if you want to keep or save that tree?
Right, right. Well, there's a couple things you could do. If that tree failed, could you identify a potential target that it might hit? And sometimes we can remove a target rather than remove the tree.
So don't park under that branch.
Parking, picnic tables, play equipment. If we can move the potential target, then that might help us. Perhaps pruning sometimes can help us get out of a problem. There are some arborists that will install hardware or things to the tree or in the tree that will shore it up. But I want to make sure that people understand that hardware will never make the tree 100% safe again. And not that any tree is 100% safe, but there are some things that we can install in trees, particularly cables high up in the canopy of the tree that might lend some stability. And of course, that's another option. But these are all things that have to be determined on site, in consultation with a trained arborist.
Now, a lot of us with the trees in our yards also like to use these trees for recreation. A tree swing is a great thing. Zip lines are popular and fun.
Yes,
slack
yes,
lines yes. Are something that we're seeing a lot more of.
You're baiting me. I know you're baiting me.
So Jeff, how do you feel about things like that?
You know, I'm going to get myself in trouble here. You know, a lot of college campuses are wrestling with the tree hammocking and the slackline stuff that is going on. And, you know, we have...
And if you're not on a college campus, this is actually kind of a big trend. A lot of people will carry around one of those lightweight hiker hammocks and string it up and enjoy the afternoon, go to a park on campus, that kind of thing. It's very common.
And the good news is people are outside enjoying life off their cell phones, off their computer equipment, and they're out communing with the trees. Great. I like that. But I worry that some of these devices are being attached to trees and they could cause damage to the plant. So we're loving these trees to death. We like to hammock in them. There's nothing better than swinging from a tree branch. But what size branches are you attaching your hammocks to? Or is your device rubbing into the trunk and causing vascular damage? So in the slack lines, you know, if you've ever watched somebody on a slack line, they're bouncing up and down on this thing and it just looks bad to me, but I'm coming at this from I have to announce my biases here.
Right.
I just would hope people would pay attention to the size of the branch tree they're attaching their devices to, and making sure that what they're using is soft and is kind to our trees. And you know, on our campus, we have set up some poles for people to attach their devices to, in lieu of attaching them to live trees. I'm not sure that provides you the same outdoor experience, but I sure like it. But I just ask people to pay attention to that.
All right.
Now, you also mentioned tree houses.
Right.
You got to be careful. You know, you want to make sure you're putting your tree house in a safe tree. So whatever that means.
Well, and do you have any thoughts about that? I mean, I have heard people say, you know, if you're going to build a treehouse, just make sure that you have the supports reaching to the ground, for example. So yeah. It's actually like around a tree or near a tree, not necessarily supported by a tree.
Yeah.
That seems like something you might endorse.
That's a great idea. In fact, if the treehouse was kind of freestanding with very little attachment to the tree, I also worry about the things that you nail into the tree that might someday cause trouble. So
when do you decide that it's time to remove a tree, which is such a hard decision to make?
It is, and the tree has to be showing me all kinds of signs. Is there a crack that can't be addressed? The way we've just talked. Is it close to a house? Is there a target? Is there a chance that if the tree does fail, that it's going to cause damage to property or to people? And Charity, I don't mean to make this sound like an easy decision because it requires careful study. It requires several on-site visits. And I know that there's a people part of this. People love their trees and they appreciate what trees do for them. And the hardest part of any arborist job or the few times that I've gotten involved in things like this is to convince people that it's time for the tree to come down, to walk away and say, well, let's just hope for the best is not a very good strategy. And usually that wins the day. But these are not easy calls. I've become very risk averse. And especially if I go out and put my name on the line, and I'm also, I guess, in a way representing the university, I am very, very conservative. And if the tree looks like it might cause me trouble or cause the people trouble, then I'm recommending removal.
All right. Well, and it's a huge cost as well, which I think is something that people talk themselves out of doing it because it's so expensive.
Who plans on a $3,000 tree care bill?
Right. Nobody. No one.
I don't.
All right. Well, we will answer your questions about trees and the other plants in your life with me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron's going to join us in just a moment, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. And you can call with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And you are welcome to join the conversation. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Again, questions about any of the plants in your life. They don't have to be tree questions, but they can be. Here's Joanne in Coal Valley, Illinois. Hi, Joanne.
Well, good morning.
What's your question?
My question is about my Concord grape. I was late pruning them, probably the end of March, and I pruned them severely. Now I have not had much bloom, and there are very, very few grapes. So what have I done wrong, please?
Well, as far as pruning time, basically late March, early April is fine as far as a pruning time. And just be aware that they bear fruit on the previous year's growth. So you need to prune them back quite a bit, but you typically have to leave or want to leave around 40 to 50 to 60 buds capable of producing fruit. So don't prune too severely.
There's a lot of vine, so that isn't the indication, right?
Right. The key is how much of last year's growth you retain. You may have a vine that goes out maybe 10 or 12 feet, and you may have to prune it back quite a bit, but you want to count the buds on last year's growth. And when you do so, when you're done, there should be 40 to 50 to 60 buds still left on those vines from last year that will produce the fruit.
All right, so it's probably too late for anything this year, obviously.
Can't do anything this year, no.
But for next year,
right.
When you're pruning, you've got to retain that growth.
Right.
All right.
A certain amount of it.
Yeah, good luck with that, Joanne. It's something people spend a lot of time learning how to do. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Reed, somewhere along I-80. Hi, Reed.
Hi, and thanks for the show today. I got a quick question about the tree species ash. I heard the comments about some trees that are stronger or weaker and resisting wind damage and such, and I've got an ash tree in the yard. It suffered some storm damage, but I wonder if you can give a sense of how strong that tree is as a species.
Yeah, great question, Reed. And I probably backed myself into a corner by saying that. I think ash is kind of middle of the road, but it all depends on how the tree's been maintained. If it's a good, strong tree with good, strong branch attachment, and the branches are in balance, then it should be just fine. I mentioned in the last segment, when those side branches start to get as big as the trunk, then I begin to worry, and ash will sometimes do that. Also, a word of caution, as you know, we have this insect in the Midwest, emerald ash borer, and as it begins to move through our area and as it begins to kill ash, remember these ash trees get very brittle as they die, so a dead ash is not a tree to leave in place, but I don't know if I've answered your question, but this is one of those situations where a trained arborist could give you a better assessment than I could just hearing about your tree.
Yeah, Reed, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, another question about an ash tree. Sherry's on the line in Walford. Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, we have an ash tree we planted. It's a green ash about 15 years ago. It's about 20 feet tall, and it's been a healthy tree. But this spring, it didn't leaf out like it normally does. Mm. And a couple of limbs have no leaves. They look like they're dead. We have had it treated for the emerald ash borer every 2 years for the last 6 years. Mm. And it was just treated recently, like 2 weeks ago.
All right.
So I don't know if it's got some kind of a fungus or if it's something more serious.
Did you, the folks that did the treatment, did you pose that question to them when they were on site?
Well, we weren't home when they came.
Oh.
So, and it's not a tree place that does it. It's more of a general landscaping lawn care type place.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd only be guessing that this is a pretty young tree, and it must be a valuable tree since you've decided to treat. And if you've been treating religiously for the past 6 years, then I can't imagine that this is emerald ash borer. So it might be something else, but what that is anybody's guess. Is the tree still looking rather threadbare?
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe someone coming into the yard wouldn't notice it, but because we know it's usually very full and lush,
yeah.
It's looking kind of puny to us. I don't know if it was anthracnose, maybe, and maybe wait till next spring and see what it does.
Well, you would see if it were anthracnose, you would have seen some recovery by now. Has there been any alterations to the site? What about the trunk? Has there been any trunk damage?
No,
yeah.
No.
Well, you can always send me some photos, and we can discuss them that way. It always helps if I've got something to look at, but I don't really know. This tree is too young to be having problems.
Well, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Sherry. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. People have been saving up their tree questions for you, Jeff, so we'll give Richard a question here, and sure. Then we'll get back to trees. Jack's question, Richard, is what causes geranium plant leaves to turn yellow?
I would assume that would be a nutrient issue. They might want to maybe lightly fertilize it. If they saw maybe some brown spotting in addition to the yellowing, that would probably be some type of disease.
All right. And now it's back to trees. Mehdi is on the line in Des Moines. Hi.
Hi there. I started a crabapple tree from an Arbor Day start, and the rabbits ate it for a couple years. But this year, it's got probably 6 shoots, and one of them's about 4 feet tall. And I just wanted to know, do I leave them all to grow, or should I cut them off and just leave the biggest one, or what?
So this was a tree that, how big was it when you got it?
It was about a 1 foot long stick.
Oh.
And it had been dipped in purple paint, and it had some roots.
Right.
And so I bermed it over the winter the first year and then planted it in the spring.
Yep. But that long stick, that's what the rabbits got to, and that eventually died?
I'm not sure if it's alive in there.
Yeah. Where I'm going with this is, as you may know, a lot of trees are grafted. So when you buy a crab apple, for example, at the garden center or from wherever you get it from, you really got two trees in one. You've got a root system that's been attached to a top. And if the top died, if the top died, then what you're getting is growth from the root system, which might not be as desirable as what you first started with. So, yeah, you can play around with it. You can take the strongest of those shoots or remove the others and see what you end up with. But it might not be of the same quality as what you began with.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I will play around.
Yeah. What you're not out anything.
So. Right.
Thanks a lot for your call. We've got another crab apple question here. This one's from Marion in Milan, Illinois. My flowering crab tree has a hollow sounding area in the trunk. Is there a way to save the tree? Is it dangerous to do nothing? There is a large canopy of branches.
Yeah.
If not, how close may I plant a new tree to where the old tree was planted?
You know, the good news about crab apples is that they don't get huge. And so if they do fall apart, generally that you won't get damage unless you're sitting underneath it when it falls apart. But the hollow area, I mean, if the tree is old, yes, there could be some decay, and maybe that's what the homeowner is recognizing. But I don't know, it sounds like the tree might be on its way out. It's hard to say, but if you want to plant anything else next to the tree, I would just give it plenty of room to grow. It would depend on what you're planting. If it's another crab apple, they like full sun, so you'd want to make sure that there's enough sunlight to accommodate the new plant. But these are great questions. They're not easy to answer. The good news is crab apples hopefully won't get big enough to hang over your house.
Right. All right, let's go back to the phones. Mary is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I got three trees, actually, I want to talk about. One is a maple tree. It had, a year ago, it had lovely leaves. Everything was fine. This season, it just got half of its leaves, and then they all turned brown and came off. Is that tree dead?
Doesn't sound good. What do you know what kind of a maple it is, Mary?
No.
Okay. Green leaves, red leaves?
Green leaves.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, that's hard to say, but so the leaves fell off and nothing else is sprouted
up.
Okay. Doesn't sound good.
Doesn't sound good. I called a couple of arborists. They said they'd come by, but they didn't.
Yeah, these.
That's what it still had leaves.
Yeah, but now it doesn't have leaves. Well, that's never a good sign for a tree, especially in July. So I'm not sure I'd hold out a whole lot of hope there.
And then I want to talk about my two crabapple trees.
Excellent.
One just had one day of flowers, and it just went, and it wasn't from rain or anything. It just, the purple one just gone, and the white one flowered for a few days, but nothing like it's done every other year, and nothing like the trees that are a block away from here.
So, Mary, how did these trees perform in 2017?
Wonderful.
Yeah. You know, some trees get in the habit of putting on a great show in alternate years. And it's really frustrating when that happens, but I can name you 3 or 4 selections that are popular in the nursery trade where they will do gangbusters 1 year, and then the next year they'll kind of sit it out. We call that alternate bearing. It happens in a lot of fruit-bearing trees. So there's not a whole lot you can do about it, but I would hazard a guess, and you can call me on this next year, I would hazard a guess that you're in for a good floral display next spring.
I hope so. Everybody in the neighborhood comes and photographs it.
Yeah, well, just
not this year.
Just get
spectacular.
Them on.
So, and if she doesn't, then she can complain to you. This is a Jeff Isles guarantee.
I might not be here. We never know where we're going to be. Sure.
<So. laughs> Okay. Well, thanks a lot for answering my question.
Thanks a lot for your call, Mary. Next up, we've got Julie in Iowa City. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I have a few 20-year-old bur oaks in my yard, and I'm aware that I can only prune those in the winter, and I do to avoid the oak wilt. But things look totally different in the spring, and I have some branches that are overhanging the sidewalk now. In anticipation of pruning those whole branches off in the winter, can I take the ends off that are just over the sidewalk, or will that invite oak wilt? They're about half inch to an inch in diameter where I would take them off over the sidewalk.
If I am to toe the company line here, I would have to say don't prune now.
I
realize that they're in the way, but you might want to mark them, you know, put paint on them or something to remind you which ones need to come off. But
you're right.
You know, and a dear colleague of mine, Dr. Paul Ray, we used to say, well, if it were in my yard, I would do this. But I can't say that on the air.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
But the answer I'm giving you right here for everybody to hear is wait till the dormant season.
Oh, my gosh. She can't hear you winking at her over the radio. I mean, seriously, if it were in your yard, you'd do something now?
I can't hear you. We've got a bad connection here, Charity. There's something wrong with my headset.
Well, Julie, thanks a lot for your call, and best of luck to you. We've got another oak tree question, and controversy is brewing.
It is.
Randy is on the line in Victor. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. So this oak tree looks fine, but somebody's trying to tell me that it's hollow. I think it's a bur oak. Can I get some kind of a core drill to go in the trunk, you know, like a quarter inch around? Would that work to figure it out?
That's a great question, Randy. And there are some special coring devices that arborists will use. There are some other devices. There's a thing called a resistograft that will send in a very small drill bit to give you a feel for what's going on inside of the tree. I've even seen some trained arborists that they will actually use a mallet and can give a pretty good estimate of what's going on inside the tree just by hammering on the outside of the trunk with this rubber mallet. So there's a number of things you can do. Obviously, I would turn this over to the experts. I would not recommend that you do this yourself. But there are some less invasive techniques to determine what's going on inside of the tree. And if you suspect hollow, I'd want to get an answer to that one.
So I got a limb that hangs out away from the house about 30 foot because there used to be other trees around it. I think that limb is probably a sunshine feeder, if that's what you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to turn that back, is it wintertime a good time to do that?
Yes. Yeah, wait till the dormant season.
You don't want to take too many limbs off because it'll be hard on the tree, right?
Well, yeah, you want to try to limit the amount of tissue you take off at any one time. There's all kinds of percentages thrown out there, but, 10-15% is all I'd want to remove. But yes, please don't do that, and that's going to leave probably a fairly good sized wound. So that is best done in the dormant season, and I'm not winking here at all.
Thank you.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, so many tree questions. Next up, Joseph in Des Moines. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I appreciate your show very much. Yeah, I have a question about the emerald ash borer controversy. I noticed that in my town there are a lot of them that have been removed by the city workers, even though a lot of the trees that I've seen seem completely healthy and not always threatening power lines. And even the ones that seem like maybe if they did get sick, maybe they'd fall in the line, that would be bad. But I noticed that there were other trees all around town that were not the same type of tree that were a threat to the power, not a threat, just wrong word, but you know, could fall on a power line, and those weren't taken down. So I was wondering, and originally I saw some ash trees that were, looked like three of them that were about 100 years or more, you know, according to their diameters of the stumps that were left. So I was just wondering what can be done to prevent overzealous chopping down to them, because I've never actually seen the pest, the actual emerald ash borer. I've never seen the pest, but I've seen plenty of trees that have been chopped down by the city. So
all right. Well, Joseph, let's. I don't think Jeff can explain every city's approach to it, but give us an idea of what what the goal is here with cities taking out ash trees while they're still healthy, before there's evidence.
So I'll try to be succinct here, but Joseph, if you've ever been in Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, some of the states that have been really hammered by emerald ash borer, you'll understand the devastation that is coming our way. And I'm not going to soft pedal this at all. Yes, it's taken a while for emerald ash borer to really gain a foothold in the state and to really start causing damage. But you don't even have to travel to Detroit. You can just travel to Waterloo to see what kind of damage this insect will do. And it's not going away. The insect is not going to disappear. And so we are in this for the long haul. What a lot of cities are trying to do is get ahead of the curve, because when these trees start to go, and believe me, they will, it'll be an avalanche of dead trees lining your city streets. And cities just won't be able to keep up with them. And if you were with us earlier on in the program, I might have mentioned that ash are dangerous creatures when they die. They become very, very brittle. And so in preparation for the destruction that is sure to come, cities are taking down ash trees in public right-of-ways or trees that they have control over to get ahead of the eventual problems that are coming our way.
And I watched it happen in Michigan. It's just devastating. We have to go to a break here. Jeff Iles is here, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. You are welcome to join us with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And you're welcome to join us. Your questions about trees, about plants. We've had a lot of tree questions so far this hour. They don't have to just be about trees, but obviously a lot of people are wondering about various issues. We do have a plant question for you, Richard. Tom is on the line in Beaverdale. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are we today?
Great. What's your question?
I have a trellis out on the east side of my house, beside the garage, and I bought, at your suggestion, a morning glory. I think it's called like cardinalis. Supposed to have red flowers.
Okay.
Well, it climbs the trellis like crazy, but I've yet to see a single flower.
Maybe a little bit early yet. You may have to wait till like August on that.
Okay.
And then
I didn't know if
be,
it was maybe not getting enough sun or
I think
whatever,
that's probably okay. But I'm just thinking it may be a little bit later on in, basically, I would say maybe late summer.
So I just need to add some patience.
Right. Do not fertilize the plant. Definitely do not, because that would tend to discourage flowering and just produce leafy growth. So do not fertilize at all.
That's what I'll do. I appreciate your help.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Tom. And next up, let's go to Amy in Clive. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
What's your question?
So we have been developing an orchard for about the last 6 to 8 years. And so some of the trees are about 7 years old, and some of them are a year old. And we have about 15 trees, and we have yet to harvest. Oh, okay, we've harvested one apple in all of that time. They flower. We have a variety. We have peach trees, some apple trees, plum trees. We added cherry trees. We even got ourselves two bee colonies in case it was a pollination problem. We got the bees this year. And again, this year I have nothing on any of the trees. And I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. Some of the trees we bought had fruit on them when we bought them. So I know that that they are capable of producing. We just can't get them to produce.
Well, that's a difficult question. When you plant a fruit tree, oftentimes they don't flower and bear fruit for several years, maybe 4 or 5, 6 years. After that point, they should go ahead and flower and begin to bear fruit. If they're flowering but not bearing fruit, that would suggest they were either damaged by maybe, for example, a late frost or freeze, or maybe we had cool weather during flowering we didn't have very good pollination, but something is affecting the pollination where we're not getting fruit set. Now, with apples and pears, you do need at least two different varieties because they require cross-pollination. So if they have that, that's one issue that's basically been met. But if they're flowering and you have different varieties, it's difficult to say. Either we had poor pollination because of poor bee activity, or maybe a late frost or freeze may be damaged to flowers.
Okay. I guess so. There's really nothing I can do except for hope that one of these years I have some good conditions.
Well, hopefully they will. There's a couple of things that you don't want to do. Again, you don't want to fertilize fruit trees because that tends to promote vegetative growth and possibly discourage flower development. Also, when you prune them lightly on an annual basis. Do not prune them severely because, again, that tends to promote vegetative growth. So light pruning every year is good, not heavy pruning.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Amy. We've got another fruit tree question here. Ryan in Waterloo. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. So Waterloo, definitely the ash trees are becoming very, very clearly affected now. But I'm talking about pear trees. We just recently moved, and we have a pear tree, a green pear. It's got a lot of pears on it that I don't think I'll be able to keep up with. But it's pushing 25 to 30 feet tall now, and the main beams are probably 8 to 12-inch diameter. Wondering, pruning-wise, can I be aggressive over the winter? What's the strategy here to get this back to a manageable size?
Well, it's going to be a large tree, and you really can't make it small. You can do some thinning, and that would probably give you better quality fruit, where you take out maybe some of the limbs, but you really can't drastically reduce the size of the tree. Somewhat, but not drastically.
My main concern is it's close to the house and getting that tall sort of thing. So it might be something to think about removal in the future if I think it's becoming a risk then.
Possibly. Most of the fruit trees that you buy nowadays are typically dwarf or semi-dwarf. They're much easier to manage, to prune, to harvest. They might get to be maybe 12 to 15 feet tall at maximum. But the standard trees can get to be like 30, maybe 35 feet. So
it's a good mature tree. Because I do have a purple pear next to it that's probably only 10 or 12 feet tall.
Okay.
That's is much more manageable.
All right. Standard trees can get awfully big, yes.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Ryan. Next up, we've got Bill in Sac City. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Charity. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And one of the things I see people do is disregard the care of the root systems of trees when they're working around them. As an example, I see construction people tear up the soil around trees and also compact the soil with heavy equipment. Whenever I mention this to anyone, they don't seem to take it seriously and dismiss it. And I try to be kind or, you know, just as a matter of fact. But my question is what precautions should people observe when working around the root system of a tree? And secondly, how far out do the roots go from the base of the tree so that they know where to take caution?
Bill, that's a great comment and a great question. Thanks for bringing it to the fore here. The area, at least under the drip line, is sacred ground, and no heavy equipment or grade changes should occur under the drip line. There are some formulas that we use to develop a tree protection zone when construction is imminent, and many times those zones extend well past the drip line. So a misconception is the roots stop at the tips of the branches, and they don't. In fact, they can spread as much as 3 to 4 times the diameter of the crown, sometimes even more broadly, depends on soil conditions. So during construction, root damage is unavoidable, but we certainly can minimize the amount of damage by creating these tree protection zones underneath and just outside the tree canopy. And we use bright orange fence or something to alert to the workers that they should not be inside that zone. But you're right, a lot of construction happens and the trees are an afterthought, and then 3 or 4 years later, we wonder why the tree is declining, and you can trace it back to that construction damage.
All right. Well, Bill, thanks so much for bringing that up. Jim is on the line in Fort Dodge. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Hey, I'm calling about a integrity issue with a tree. It's a large tree, probably 50 foot. It wise off coming off the ground into two large branches, and it's on a neighbor's property, but right on the property line. Mm. It's being held together. Those two large branches are being held together by a chain.
Ah. Right.
And the chain itself has worked its way through about halfway through both of those large branches.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if the tree repairs itself as the chain works its way through and grows back together, or what is the structural integrity of that tree?
Yeah. Great question, Jim. Are you in good terms with your neighbor?
We've talked to him about the issue several times. It's actually a tree that's on my involves my mother's house. She's 95 and lives in the family home.
I see.
And the neighbor is in the process of selling his home, and the home is empty. We've talked to the realtor, and they just shrug.
Yeah. Boy, this is a kind of a legal question and an arboriculture question. You know, I had a situation like this once, and I actually went halvesies with my neighbor to remove a tree in his yard. It wasn't on the property line. It was in his yard. So I don't know if you're willing to do that, but this tree doesn't sound good to me. The chain, the tissue that the chain is affecting will never heal. I hate to use that term even lightly when I'm talking about trees, because tree damage never heals. But it will grow around the chain, so there is still some structural integrity that the tree will try to develop. Still, this doesn't sound good. The Y-ing or the branch close to the ground is not good. Do you know what kind of a tree it is?
I don't. It's a deciduous, about 50 foot tall.
Yeah.
One branch hangs over the neighbor's home.
Yeah.
The other branch hangs over my mother's home and her garage, and the way the tree is positioned in his backyard, I just don't see any way. The only way to take the tree down would be to go up and remove it from the top, you know, and drop the tree down from the top.
Yeah, and that's what a good arborist would do. The thing is that chain is announcing to the world that, hello, everybody, we've got a dangerous tree here. Not a good thing. If that tree was under my care, I would be worried about it. So I don't have an answer for you there, except that maybe you extend an olive branch, so to speak, and you offer to go halvesies.
Okay. That sounds good. I just wondered about, the health of the tree,
well,
and it sounds like it's not good.
I without seeing it, it's hard to say, but it doesn't sound good to me either.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks
a
lot for your call, Jim. Next up, Susan in Fairfield. Hi, Susan.
Hi. So I've got a question about white pine trees. We have a property with a lot of white pines that were put in, in the last 50 years. So they're, good size. Some of them are, mature trees, very, very tall. And over the last couple of years, every year we see, one here, one there that dies. It turns brown and dies. And we're wondering what's going on.
Yeah. So these are mature trees that are dying?
Quite mature.
Yeah.
Last year they had, they all had millions of pine cones.
Yeah. Well, we're into the realm now of making educated guesses. White pine are fine conifers. They are one of my favorite. They do pretty well in the state of Iowa. But they don't like poor drainage. They don't like root disturbance, and sometimes when they're too close together, they begin to shade each other out. So I can only guess here what's going on, Susan. Disease could be a factor, but I'm guessing it's more environmental than anything else. And a lot of pine cones usually, to me, signals that the tree is under stress. So it'd be kind of fun to see how the trees are aligned in the landscape, and if those that are dying, if there's any commonality, are the ones that are dying in low areas, areas where it doesn't drain well, or is there some other commonality that you could maybe put two and two together? But it sounds like they're dying rather quickly when they begin to show symptoms.
Well, Susan, thanks a lot for the call. And we have a lot of calls we're not going to get to this hour. I apologize for that. Let's try to get through a few emails here. John and Marion says, I have a cottonwood about 35 years old that's leaking sap down the trunk from about 6 feet up. Is this tree dying? How long before I have to remove it? You want to play psychic for us there?
Leaking trees doesn't always mean danger. It doesn't always mean the tree's dying. There's all kinds of things that will leak out of trees for all kinds of reasons. There might be some internal decay going on there, but this is a tree. Just the word cottonwood tells me that you better have somebody look at that plant.
All right. Jeff in Mount Vernon says, I have a catalpa tree that was planted 3 years ago and has grown beyond its ability to support the leader, which bent over in a spring storm. We pruned to a single leader and tied a bamboo splint to the remaining leader, which is now 20 feet tall, but it's still growing very fast. We have an 8-foot gap between the tallest laterals and the newest leaves, so we're now considered topping it back 4 feet to the nearest node to establish a stronger leader and encourage more laterals. Is this a good idea?
Wow.
Did you follow that?
I did. I was writing as fast as I could.
Good. Good.
Jeff should send me these photos, and we can discuss this at our leisure. That's an involved question. I appreciate his arboriculture techniques here, but. Yeah, he's doing a lot of things right, but I need some time to think about that one. I'd love to see a picture.
All right. Here's a question from Barbara. My neighbor has a maple that has four main trunks. Two of the trunks are completely dead and have been for a couple of years. The owners don't live there. It's a rental. If they fall, they'll take out the main electric line and our shed. What should I do?
obviously, the landlord might not have an interest in this. I don't know. It's hard when trees are on other people's property and they threaten life and limb. It's hard to sometimes get their attention. We need to develop a brochure, Charity. Something like, if this tree were in my yard, I'd do something about it. But
so you just deliver that to your neighbor?
Yeah, about midnight, you drop it on the door and you run. But
I'm sure that'd be super effective.
I think there's all kinds of trees in the landscape that need our attention. People either look the other way purposely or they just don't know.
Right. All right. Here's one for you, Richard, from Drew in Princeton. We just bought a new house and the backyard's completely overgrown with poison ivy and other plants that sting and itch. I want to cut this back with a brush mower and replant with grass. The yard in question is on a hillside and is heavily shaded by large mature oaks. Sorry. What do you recommend to kill the weeds and what grass seed would be best?
As far as the grass seed, I would be shooting for... the fine leaf fescues, like creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue. I would be shooting for a mid to late August seeding date. I'd probably use maybe a erosion control mat after seeding so we don't have erosion. And as far as the destruction of the current vegetation, I'd probably use glyphosate or Roundup.
And it says heavily shaded by large mature oaks. Mm. So if they're going to use herbicide, they've got to be super targeted not injure surrounding.
Right. If you apply glyphosate or Roundup beneath the trees and don't get it on the trees, they'll be fine.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Jeff Iles, thank you very much.
Thank you, Charity.
We gave you a workout today.
It was fun. Great. Thank you.
Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and obviously a tree guy. We will be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.